You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network.
You're listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. Come on, Dolphins fans. Time to fins up.
Miami's got the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air.
Good evening, Miami Dolphins fans. How are you tonight? Welcome to the DolphinsTalk.com post-game wrap-up show sponsored by BetUS. I am your host, Tom Ernesty. With me, as always, on the post-game wrap-up shows is Mike Oliva. Mike, how you doing tonight?
Tom, I am great. Another season of the post-game wrap-up show, 2021 version. We've been doing this many, many years now. We were one of the first on the internet, at least, not counting radio, to do a post-game wrap-up show like this, in this type of format. So another season, I'm excited for it. With Miami Dolphins football and, you know, real games, even though it's a preseason, real games now underway.
Yeah, this is an exciting time. You know, we talk about getting to this point, and now the Miami Dolphins are officially playing football again. Granted, the games aren't going to count for wins and losses when it really matters, but it was great to see the team on the field in their first preseason game in Chicago. You know, we got some things to talk about from this game and how the Dolphins performed.
Yeah, I mean, like any preseason game, there's positives. There's negatives. There's things that you really liked what you saw, and there's things that give you reason for concern. There's both positives and negatives, like any team right now in the league has right now. So Miami Dolphins, especially in the first half today, looked great on one side of the ball. On offense, they didn't look bad, but there was some red flags there that I'm sure we'll get to. Yeah, but overall, it was, you know, a good enough day for the Miami Dolphins in this first preseason game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're going to touch on all of this as we go through. We're really going to talk about the first half of this game because the second half, you know, we're talking about guys that may not even be on the roster going forward. And, you know, we'll touch on Justin Fields, his performance, and obviously what he had to say after the game, which was kind of funny just to hear some of his comments regarding the game, but we're going to jump right in and talk about it. The Dolphins received the opening kick, and it kind of was reminiscent of last year a little bit, where the ground game just couldn't get things going after a 2-yard run from Malcolm Brown, two consecutive incomplete passes. The first one on 2nd and 8, Adam Shaheen needed to catch that ball. That was perfectly placed ball in the soft zone of that secondary. Shaheen had to come up with that ball, and then Tagovailoa was rushed and had to throw the ball away. On 3rd down, and the Dolphins go 3 and out. Mike, what were your thoughts on that, on the drop by Shaheen? Because obviously it's something that really stalled the drive out, and it was a great throw from Tua.
Yeah, it was a perfect throw. It's one of those things, just a drop. You know, Adam Shaheen's an interesting guy. If not for the sort of off-the-field stuff with him, I think fans would really love him more. I think what, you know, some of his political stances off the field does turn off half the fan base to him. But on the field, he's still a solid player. He had a drop, not the end of the world here. And but I just think, and it was interesting that prior to the game, the Miami Dolphins for the coin toss sent out one captain, Adam Shaheen, because he's a former Bear. Don't know if there's anything to read into that. Just maybe a little bit.
But it's such a Patriots thing.
It is. It's such a Patriots thing to do.
You learn from Belichick.
It's a passive aggressive type. Yep. Okay, we're sending out one guy, the former Bear,
for sure.
Adam Shaheen. Maybe he's got COVID and a cough on you too. I don't know. But
we're starting to show with a bang.
Yeah. Well, it's just. Folks, I'm joking. But Adam Shaheen, you know, I think he's a very good player. With the Hunter Long injury, which sounds like, I don't know how long he's going to be out. It does sound like he's going to be out a while, though. He probably, I mean, he might not be back to October, November-ish. Shaheen's going to have a large role in this offense. But and his first drive was a drop, and is what it is.
Yeah, you know, he'll learn from that and move forward. We'll see how everything goes from there. But as the Bears get the ball and they go three and out, they try two runs to gain 6 yards, and Andy Dalton throws incomplete for a punt, and the Dolphins get the ball, and they have a 7-play, 60-yard drive that took 4 minutes and 11 seconds off the clock. A very methodical drive here where Malcolm Brown started with a 4-yard run. Tua hit Shaheen for 2 yards, and setting up third and four, Tua passes deep down the left sideline to Mike Gesicki for a 50-yard gain to the Chicago 7. What a pass. The linebacker, I believe it was Ogletree, had his back turned chasing Gesicki, and Tua recognized it and threw it because it's almost an unguardable pass at that point for Ogletree, as he had his back turned and you can only play between your shoulders. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it was a very good throw.
And the one thing on that play, Tom, the one thing on that play was the offensive line, which we might not say a lot of positive things about, but let's get one positive thing out of the way, had picture perfect pass protection on that play. I thought it was they gave him time to and it was a great play.
Yeah, Tua was able to keep his feet moving, kept his eyes moving downfield, and teams will learn. You cannot have you can't leave Mike Gesicki on a line or a linebacker on Mike Gesicki. It just doesn't work. 9 out of 10 times he's going to burn you, and they did it in that situation. And on first and goal from the 7, Tua hit Mac Hollins on a slant for 6 yards. And then same old Dolphins, they stall out inside at the 1 yard line as Malcolm Brown could not carry it in twice, setting up fourth and goal from the 3. Kind of thought they could have gone for it, but they decided to kick a field goal, give Jason Sanders some work, and the Dolphins took a 3-0 lead. After that, the Bears again go 3 and out, and the Dolphins have a 13-play, 52-yard drive that unfortunately ends in a Tua Tagovailoa interception. It was an awful throw, but overall for the drive, Mac Hollins for 16 yards that was negated by an Austin Jackson penalty. Tua hits Durham Smythe for 11. Miles Gaskin goes for 3. Tua hits Gesicki for 6 for a first down. Malcolm Brown found some running room at 6 yards, and then Malcolm Brown lost 5 yards on the next play. So it kind of negates, but 3rd and 9, Tua hits Mac Hollins for 14 yards. And it just like the notes from practice throughout the week was Mac Hollins was no one could guard him. No one could guard Mac Hollins, and he's really starting to carve a role out here with Tua, and it's going to be hard for the Dolphins to move on from Mac Hollins. And I thought for sure Mac Hollins could have been a guy that they could move on from after getting Waddle. They can do some special team stuff with like Robert Foster and things, but Mac Hollins has been performing well all summer long. That is not a Kid Rock reference. I do not like Kid Rock. Tua Tagovailoa hits Malcolm Brown for 7. And then on 2nd and 3 for no gain at the end of the first quarter, the score is 3-0. 3rd and 3, Malcolm Brown for 2 yards, setting up 4th and 1. And it was picked up for a first down. Tua then hits Gaskin for 3. Gaskin goes for 14 yards. And then Tua throws the interception. It's a ball he had to eat or throw away. It's not something that you want to force. In that kind of position, you're taking points off the board. It's a learning experience for Tua. It was not a good throw. Let's be real about it. We can praise him. At the same time, we have to call it the way it is. It was not a good throw. It was not a good decision. And he admitted that after the game.
Yeah, there's a few things here. I know Lewis Riddick of ESPN said Adam Shaheen has to be more aggressive to try and get the ball. Well, that's true too, but it's still you still don't throw the ball late over the middle. Well, in that part of the field, it was a bad read into double coverage late over the middle of the field. It's a bad decision. When I know some fans on Twitter get mad when he's saying anything slightly negative about Tua, nobody's hating Tua, nobody's bashing Tua. It's just one bad play over the course of a game. That's all it was. Aside from that one bad play, Tua was fantastic today. So nobody's bashing Tua. But when you're in the red zone, you can't make a throw like that. It's a bad decision. And you know, hopefully we don't see it again. But in this game, it's a knock. That was the one bad play. I was surprised he went out there for the third offensive series because I thought you're playing with fire in two ways. You're playing with fire. Number one, this is the first preseason game. Only bad things can happen. Really, only bad things can happen in the first preseason game. So putting him out there for a third offensive series, especially how the offensive line, outside of like a play here and a play there, really wasn't that good today. So you're playing with fire, and there's a chance he could take an unnecessary hit. That's number one. Number two, Tua up until that last pass was having a fantastic day, but that one pass puts a wet blanket on the entire day, and it's like there was no upside, I felt, and I said it in real time on my social media account, so it's not a second guess. This was a first guess of putting him out there for the third offensive series. I'm like, this makes no sense. And, you know, is it the end of the world? No. Is it that big a deal? No. But it does. That one pass, that one interception kind of puts a wet blanket on his entire day. When if you take him out after a second offensive series, you're like, wow, he had a pretty good day and he looked good. Let's go on to Atlanta next week. Because I know fans get excited for these preseason games, but they literally mean nothing. Only bad things can happen. And but overall, Tua was good. Let's not, you know, bury the headline here. Tua had a very good day. And there's no doubt he is going to be improved over what we saw last year. So, and plus he also didn't have Parker Williams, Will Fuller, and all that good stuff. So is what it is. But, Tom, let's take a little break here and talk about a few things. Number one, Malcolm Brown came out as running back one, as he has been listed on the depth chart. And he wasn't great today, but again, it's tough to get a fair judgment of any running back in the first half because the offensive line just wasn't good. Malcolm Brown, though, near the goal line at the one,
got to get in the end zone.
You got to get in the end zone. Now, I know the offensive line was bad. There's clips online for people who can find, you know, Omar Kelly just put out a clip of the one run at the goal line. Michael Dieter, who I'm not a fan of, and I've been saying it for weeks, was laying on his back. He did literally nothing on the play. So any running back's going to struggle. You could have Jim Brown, circa 1963. He wouldn't have got in on that play. So it's not all Malcolm Brown, but what do you think of Malcolm Brown at running back one today?
It gave me a twitch thinking about Jordan Howard, to be honest.
he wasn't Jordan Howard, Ben.
No, he wasn't Jordan Howard, but the stats were saying that he was. So the offensive line has to do their job 100%. There were certain instances where you could see the play that, you know, the design play doesn't develop, but there was gaping holes on the other side of the line of scrimmage. You know, that's a vision thing. And, you know, over time, those running backs like Myles Gaskin, potentially Malcolm Brown, Savon Ahmed, who had a good game today, those guys are going to start seeing those things develop. You know, you remember the times when Ricky Williams was running the ball when he first came to Miami and the design run doesn't work. Ricky Williams stops at the line of scrimmage, bounces the other way, and gets 5, 6, 7 yards or even goes further than that. I'm not saying any of these guys are Ricky Williams.
No, none of you guys can do that.
If these guys, yeah, they can't hold a candle to Ricky Williams. But there's a point where, you know, you're watching the film and you see those things break down. You have to try to make something, you know, you have to try to figure out a way to make something out of nothing. And there was a lot of nothing up front from the offensive line in this game. But, you know, it is what it is. I don't think he'll be running back one when the season starts. I think that they have him listed at running back one because they are going to have Myles Gaskin be the guy. You know, that's from all indications that I'm seeing.
I don't know. I mean, but I don't think it matters. I think it's going to be a split anyway. So I don't think it matters who's listed as one. I really do think it's going to be probably, 40-40 time share with 20% going to Salvon Ahmed, unless they go out and make a move to get somebody, which they should. But I don't think it matters who's listed as one. I think Brown, obviously, though, when they get near the end zone, he will be the back in there because he does have the size. He can move the pile. I know today he didn't, but not all that's his fault either. That offensive line was brutal today. So I do think it's going to be a timeshare with him and Myles Gaskin. Salvon Ahmed looked really good in the second half, but again, second half of that game, he was going up. He wasn't going against the Bears' first-string defense. So you got to take all that with a grain of salt. But the offensive line we have to talk about here because the offense, Austin Jackson today, and once again, he's young. And I know here's the thing.
He's 21.
He's young, and it's only year two, but he's got to be better than this. He was picked in the first round. So that's not an excuse anymore that he's young. Because if he's this young and if he's this raw, we should never have drafted him in round one.
And he played a lot of games last year.
He did, and he was fine.
A lot of experience for a, he had a lot of experience as a rookie. He played admirably at times. I wouldn't say he was, you know, a top 50 tackle in the league, but he was decent. You know,
good enough.
He was good enough.
Good enough.
You figure that you build on those, you know, those wins from last year. And today was not a good showing from him. So
he almost had a quarterback's leg freaking broken because he got beat so bad, and the guy fell right into Tua. It wasn't pretty. Solomon Kinley did not look good either. But Michael Dieter really did take the cake. I mean, I've been saying this the past couple of weeks on this podcast, the ones I do with Ian, with you. You know, I do not know how what the thought process was this offseason. With the thought that we're going to give this guy a chance to be the number one starting center. As 2019, he was brutally bad. 2020, he hardly played. And once again, our offensive line is not so talented that somebody can't crack that lineup. If you have even the least bit of skills, you can get in. Those three were just not good at all today. Matt, I think heading into next week, I hope that we give Matt Skura a chance with the first string. Not that I expect him to be a world beater, but I don't think he can be as bad as what we saw today from Dieter. Again, I know it's one preseason game, but when you watch the tape, oh my God, it's like, this is not good.
Yeah. Again, we're preseason game one, but you know, indicators right now is Chris Greer is on the phone trying to figure out something, because
so that was the Michael Lombardi report last week. And I can see why.
I can see why too. You know, they have to get better. And, you know, the way that Tua played in this game, again, take the interception away. You look at how he played with that offensive line.
Exactly.
Without his top receivers, that is a positive step in the right direction when it comes to his play. And I expect big things from Tua in year two. I think once he gets his footing, once he gets his guys, you know, we didn't see a ton of Jaylen Waddle on offense today. We saw him on punt return, and he had an electric punt return. So I could see why they want to use him back there. But they didn't have Parker. They didn't have Williams. They didn't have Albert Wilson. And all reports are those guys with Tua, they've been pretty much unguardable in camp for the most part. So the offensive line has to do – better, and Chris Greer right now has to understand this is not a group you want day in and day out protecting your quarterback. Now, obviously, again, preseason game one.
No Liam Eikenberg either.
No Liam Eikenberg. You have two preseason games left. If this second game against the Falcons next Saturday night is a complete and utter failure, like it was today against the Bears, you better be doing whatever you can to get players here that can play up front for Tua, because this could be a long season if they can't protect the quarterback.
Well, here's the thing. There's a couple things here. Number one, when it comes to the offensive line, I don't think you're going to find a starter anywhere this time of year. Nobody's going to trade one. Nobody's going to have one released. They had an entire period in free agency and an entire draft. This is who they picked. This is who they're going to war with. I think the guys who are starting are going to start. Liam Eikenberg, when he comes back, I really have high hopes for him. I think he's going to be really good this year. That does change things. You know, center, it is what it is at center. I don't know. I mean, but there's that. I think, but for depth-wise, they do need more guys. Maybe Fluker, if he gets healthy, you can try and bring him back. I don't know how bad that injury was. Nobody really does. That's the problem. You can always try and bring him back. And there are some, you know, there's some other small moves you can make. Yeah. So
Mike, one thing I will say real quick is Omar Kelly put it perfectly. Why are you trading Ereck Flowers?
Well, I've said that for weeks. I don't know why did they trade Ereck Flowers? Why are we paying for him to play to Washington? It makes no sense. Yeah. We're paying for him to play for Washington. It makes no sense.
And Flowers arguably was our best offensive lineman last year.
But even if he wasn't, having him on the roster doesn't hurt when you're paying him anyways. So what does it hurt if he's your second string guard or maybe he's your first string guard? Who knows? But we're paying him anyways. That's the part that makes no sense. If we had significant cap savings, which there was some small cap savings, but nothing significant. If there was significant cap savings, I can say this makes sense. Fine. Yeah. But when one offensive line is a weak spot on your team, and two, there's no real savings because you're paying him against your cap for him to play for another team. That move never made any sense. Never made any sense. And I've been saying it for weeks. There's things you can question. And I'm sure, once again, look, I have a real job, Tom. You got a job. Our jobs don't hinge on this stuff. So if this blows up, you know, there's people whose jobs hinge on this stuff. But we'll see. And once again, I know it's one preseason game. It's not, I don't want this to be a totally negative thing, but you know, you can sort of, it's like the Titanic. You see the iceberg ahead, you kind of know what's going to happen. I mean, it is what it is. I only have to see three or four more games to know some of these guys who have never been successful. Well, but the other thing I want to mention on a positive note was special teams. Waddle and Grant both looked electric on punt returns today. And I don't know if Grant has any true trade value. I mean, I don't know if anyone's going to trade for a guy like Grant because there are other guys like Grant in this league. He can't help you at wide receiver, really. He's really just a returner. And I don't know what a team would actually part with for just a returner. But, wow. I mean, both of those guys looked very good today. Special teams overall looked very good today. Yeah. And that will be a strength. I know it's a part of the game. I know some people like to think it's a huge part. I don't know if it's a huge part, but you can get hidden yardage in return games, and those two looked fantastic.
Yeah. You know, the special teams does play a huge role. Obviously, over the last few years with the Dolphins, we've seen a big change in the special teams unit and how they've performed. Obviously, Jason Sanders, an all-pro kicker, continuing to make kicks. And, you know, Matt Pilardi coming over from Carolina, he looks
like a part of a big leg.
He's got a big leg, and he looks fairly consistent so far in comparison to what we've seen with Matt Hawk over the last few years, where he struggled at times. He had the shanks on a consistent basis, unfortunately. But, you know, with the two return guys, one Grant punt return, as we were going through the game here, his punt return went for 34 yards and set him up at the 36-yard line. Yes, it ended in a field goal on that drive, which was Jacoby Brissett's first drive. But that's a difference maker. And if the special teams can do this on a consistent basis, it helps the offense. And we saw that last year with short fields. The Dolphins took advantage of it quite often. And, you know, they have the pieces in place. Now, regarding like the kick return, punt return thing, again, I'm a proponent. I don't want to see Waddle back there.
I do. I want the ball in his hands as much as possible.
I would prefer him just to be on offense, let him do his thing there. But after watching that first punt return today, which it looked like it was going to be dead in the water as soon as he caught it and made his first strides, he found a way to turn that into a 27-yard return or something like that.
Change of direction he has is just –
it's crazy.
You just have it or you don't, and he has it. I want – when you take a guy number six overall, you can't – play in fear. Now, if he was our number one wide receiver, it would be totally different. I'd be like, okay, I would have the same thought process as you. We can't risk losing our number one wide receiver. He's not our number one. He's at best our number three. Okay. When everyone's healthy, Will Fuller, Parker, Waddle's at best number three. So I don't mind having a punt returner with a number three wide receiver because he is so good at it. If he wasn't this good, I wouldn't want it, but he is so good. I mean, it looked like he did that change of direction. And, you know, he didn't even break a sweat, it looked like. It is unbelievable. And in a real game, if he gets three or four opportunities like that, I know he's going to get you yardage. And the thing about special teams, where this can really help Miami, both when you punt and when you return a punt, you can flip a field. And if you can flip the field multiple times a game, that is sort of those –
that puts a lot of stress
game within the game. Yes, it puts a lot of – just overall, it can help out your defense, if you can pin back an offense and help out your offense, if you give them a shorter field to work with. Yeah. So flipping the field, both in the return game and if you have a strong punter, really is something great teams can do and they use to their advantage. And I think Miami has the potential with either Waddle or Grant in the return game and with our new punter to be able to flip the field a few times a game, which can really help you inside. It's the small game inside of a larger game type deal.
Yeah. So, real quick before we move on to some other things here, after the Dolphins field goal to make it 6-0, another Chicago punt. The Bears went 3 and out. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, their first five possessions, they went 3 and out.
Well, which makes it funny because Justin Fields after the game, who, you know, Fields had a strong second half, no doubt about it, but it was against Miami's second string. In the first half, Justin Fields, you know, looked like a rookie quarterback who, you know, they got, I think
he looked like he was jittery. He looked like he was jittery going on there.
They had 2 first downs in the first half, and they came pretty much right before halftime when Miami was just playing a little bit softer. Justin Fields said after the game, it was actually kind of slow to me. Dude, we saw this last year with Tua. Bad comment. Number one, you weren't facing Xavier Howard. You weren't facing Byron Jones.
You weren't facing a scheme defense.
Or that's number two. You weren't facing a scheme defense. And number three, it's your first preseason game. Yep. So, you know, Tua said that last year. It wasn't smart. Well, he said something very similar. It wasn't smart when he said it. And this ain't smart either. Just, you know, keep your mouth shut. It's your first preseason game. This is a glorified practice session.
Outside of that, I will say this, if there's any Bears fans watching or whatever, I will say this. After watching Andy Dalton.
Oh, I don't know why you
went to Fields. At the end, you're watching Nick Foles. How can you not start Justin Fields?
Yeah, I don't know how you don't start. The only way you don't start him is if that offensive line is really a mess.
You know, for me, I think Justin Fields, you know, we see why he's a first round draft pick, right? The athleticism, he's got a good arm. He's smart. He's going to learn and he's going to have to probably do it on the fly. And I think Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace is the GM's name. They think they bought themselves a year when they took him and traded up for him because they sold a lot of draft picks to move up to get him. And they're buying time, but I think Justin Fields is going to be a good football player. Just shut up and play, man. There's no reason to say that, especially after a first preseason game against a team that's playing soft defense, vanilla. They're not scheming. They're not blitzing hard.
Here's the thing about this game. We've sort of spent the first half hour just talking about the offense. The Miami Dolphins defense in the first half was freaking amazing. They gave the Bears nothing. Time of possession at one point right before halftime up until the Bears' final drive was Miami with 18 minutes. The Bears was sixth. Like you said, the Bears didn't have any first downs up until their final drive. Nope. No Jones, no Ogba, no Howard. Nick Needham was absolutely amazing today all over the field. Igbinoghany had one very good play, one very bad play overall. You know, it wasn't awful for Igbinoghany. He played okay. The Miami Dolphins starters looked amazing on defense. There's no negative things to say about the starters. When the second string came in, shocking, when they struggled because they're second string. But the starters shut down the Bears the entire first half. If this was a real game, Justin Fields probably wouldn't have scored 1 point because the Miami Dolphins starters were eating them alive. So for the criticism we put on the Miami Dolphins offensive line and the running backs and, red zone offense, the other side of the ball was absolutely amazing.
Defense was incredible. You know, the way that I would look at this, Mike, is the entire first half, you're playing your starters is the way that Brian Flores did it. He's playing his starters and he's playing the guys that are going to be rotational players in the first half. So he ran like a normal kind of thing where, hey, my starters are going to be out there. I'm going to play my rotation guys in the second half. I'm playing the guys that are trying to make the roster. The Dolphins in the first half. So here are the numbers, okay? The Dolphins defense gave up 9 total rushing yards. They gave up 70 yards through the air for a total of 79. On the last drive from the Bears before halftime, they gained 42 yards.
So half came on one drive.
Half of it came on one drive. And again, not running a real system. They're playing vanilla. They're not doing the exotic blitzes. They're not doing the cover zero stuff. They're not doing the normal things they'll do on Sundays. And that is what the Dolphins defense can produce. And that's without their top 2 corners, their pass rusher and Ogba. I believe Jalen Phillips was also not playing.
He didn't play today.
So you don't have your array of weapons on defense. Like, they didn't have them on offense. They didn't have them on defense. But the defense shows how good this unit can be. And if this progresses, if this progression continues towards the regular season with all the guys on the field healthy, ready to go, they're going to be very difficult to play against.
And you look at who the Miami Dolphins play this year, some of the quarterbacks. Let's just look real quick here. Now, you got Zach Wilson twice, a rookie quarterback. That should be advantageous to the Miami Dolphins with their defense. The Patriots, whether it's Newton or Mac Jones, you got them twice. That should be an advantageous matchup for the Miami Dolphins and their defense. Houston has no quarterback. That should be an advantageous. Jacksonville, I think Lawrence would be really good. He's still a rookie. Carolina, Sam Darnold, that should be advantageous. Giants and Jones, I'm not quite sure about how good he is. That's going to be advantageous to Miami. Even the Saints, Winston, you never know if he's going to be hot or cold. The Miami Dolphins have a lot of advantageous matchups this year, where if they are playing at the level we expect them to on defense, they should be able to feast on rookie quarterbacks or subpar quarterbacks. And that's going to help this team win games, especially if they do struggle to run the ball, if they do struggle with the offensive line, if they're just good enough on offense, I think matchup-wise, because Miami's secondary is really, really good. Okay, I mean, Eric Rowe today played fantastic, and he was fantastic last year. There's a lot of positives and a lot of optimisms for this Miami Dolphins defense. I know I've been watching, and we're going to talk about this too shortly, sort of these shows that talk about gambling this upcoming season. And when they talk about the win total for the Miami Dolphins, most places have it at either a 9 at 9.5. And a lot of these shows with these quote-unquote experts on gambling are saying, well, the Miami Dolphins can't be as good in 2021 as they were in 2020 on defense. And I'm not so sure, because I know they had a lot of turnovers last year. And part of that is there's a little luck involved with that. And is Howard going to have 10 interceptions this year? Probably not. But he still might have 6 or 7. And 10's a lot. That's asking a lot for him to do that again. But he's still going to have a few. And he might not have as many, and that side of the ball might not have as many turnovers, but they're still going to be very good, and they might not give up a lot of points like they did last year. So I still think when you look at matchups, because the NFL is a week-to-week league, you look at advantageous matchups of your strength, which is that side of the ball for Miami on defense, against quarterbacks who are, you know, rookies, or guys like Newton, who's, you know, he's seen his best days. Miami should be able to have solid days against those teams. And then you throw in like the Panthers and Sam Darnold, Houston, Jones for the Giants, who's all right. You know, I think Miami is going to have a lot of advantageous matchups this year in games. And if the offense can just play good enough, I think they're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, they can definitely win a ton of games with their defense. We saw that last year. Their defense,
it's going to be the same recipe this year.
Yeah, same recipe. But better. I think they got more. Yep. I think they got better pieces. Javon Holland, obviously, is a P. Jalen Phillips. They have an array of weapons on defense that can cause hell.
And watch out for Brendan Scarlett, too. Watch out for Scarlett there, like the linebacker. I think he's going to have a good year.
Yeah, yeah. Duke Riley had a good game today, too.
Well, except for the one touchdown, which he totally blew the coverage on.
Yes, yes. But at the same time, they're playing a vanilla defense. They're not smart for that. Yeah. That was like a real play that the Bears run for that touchdown.
All right, so we're about halftime. It's that time in the show, Tom. We all know about that time in the show. So – first, fantasy football draft season is upon us. It's that time to put the PP back in your PPR league. With the sponsors of today's show, Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming, just launched the new Performance Package 4.0. Don't neglect your balls like the Packers front office have been neglecting Aaron Rodgers. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for kickoff by going to manscaped.com and using the promo code DolphinsTalk to save 20% in your order and get free shipping. This will help tame that Troy Polamalu in your pants. The Lawnmower 4.0, this spaceship is here to guide you on a journey to trim your body, balls, and even your A-gap. Everyone go to manscaped.com, use the promo code DolphinsTalk, save 20% and get free shipping. And also this year, we have another sponsor here on the DolphinsTalk.com podcast, BetUS.com, for all of your gambling needs. Go to BetUS.com, use the promo code DolphinsTalk, and when you sign up and you make a deposit of $100, you get a 125% sign-on bonus. That's right. You put in $100, they're going to turn that into $125. Hey, guys, with sports betting season in full force, easy for me to say, with college and NFL football fast approaching, you need a sports book. with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS have been the pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost three decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BetUS.com, and they have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 1-800-69-BETUS. That's 1-800-MY-BETUS. And you receive 125% sign-up bonus by using the promo code DolphinsTalk. They have a re-up and referral bonus. Also, BetUS is known as America's favorite sportsbook for a lot of reasons. BetUS is all of your Major League Baseball, NFL games with teams and player props and loads of NFL features and NFL odds up already. You can bet UFC matches and props, PGA golf, round matchups, and live betting on most sports, including golf. The online casino has hundreds of games, and the racebook has all your horse tracks. They have every bet type imaginable. And that is in the Sharp BetUS mobile platform is easy with full betting options. Everyone go to BetUS.com, use the promo code DolphinsTalk, and get 125% sign-on bonus. BetUS.com.
Now, my degenerate gambling is now.
We're at that time of the year. And I guess we can make that announcement that Tom and myself, for the past, 10 years or so, roughly, we've both written at one point. I started it and Tom took it over. The Gambling Corner article that we drop every Saturday morning with the hot picks on Saturday, the college games Sunday, the pro games this year. We're going to make that a YouTube show, podcast form, which you can watch us record live, and you can see it probably prior to Saturday and get the picks in. So it gives you some time to place your bets before the weekend's big game. So look out for a new DolphinsTalk.com Gambling Corner show exclusively on YouTube. Go to the Dolphins Talk YouTube page, subscribe, and smash that like button.
Smash it, you millennials. I tell you. All right. So we're going to wrap this up, in regards to the game, because we know what the second half was Justin Fields running the ball, throwing the ball. Dolphins really couldn't get anything going with Reed Sinnott in at offense. Final score was 20-13. Again, take this with a grain of salt. It's a preseason game, but when you look at the numbers, when you look at the guys that are going to be playing on Sundays, on a consistent basis, the Miami Dolphins offense produced significantly over 200 plus yards of offense in the first half. They scored 13 points and they only gave up 79 total yards of offense to the Bears while giving up 42 of them on the final drive of the first half. So I think it was a very good showing. There are good, there is bad. We've talked about that. You know, at the end, the Dolphins move forward. They come back home to play at Hard Rock Stadium next Saturday night against the Atlanta Falcons, who got worked by the Tennessee Titans in their first preseason game. So we'll see what is going to be in store and how Brian Flores is going to run this. But he is not afraid to keep those starters in until he feels they've got enough work. So,
well, that was the one thing about today's game. Yeah. If you notice, a few quick hitters here. The first string offense came out after that third drive. The offensive line did not. You could tell he was not pleased with that starting offensive line. He kept them in longer after out came Tua and some of the other starters on offense like Waddle, Mike Gesicki. That offensive line stayed in because, you know, he wanted to give them more work, clearly. You could just tell, kind of almost like a punishment, like you're staying in because you guys got to put much this is just not good. So there was that. I thought that Reed Sinnott and Jacoby Brissett actually looked pretty good. Now, again, first preseason game, they're playing against guys who aren't going to be in the league. But I thought they both had some quality drives and looked pretty good. Jacoby Brissett, if he has to play in a pinch or something, he's not going to kill you. I don't know how much he's going to help you, but he ain't going to kill you. And Reed Sinnott's a guy as your third quarterback, maybe on the practice squad and stuff.
Yep.
There's worse options than Reed Sinnott. I thought he showed a little something there, and that's a guy who I wouldn't mind having there. The backup front seven on defense didn't look great. So depth issues there, which was a concern. It's not a huge concern for me because unless there's a rash of injuries, you know, second string linebackers and stuff, I'm not too worried about. Plus, we have Elandon Roberts at some point should return, which will help there. But overall, you know, it was a solid day for the Miami Dolphins on defense. And offense, really outside of that offensive line, looked very good. Matt Collins looked good. Tua looked good. The tight ends looked good outside of one drop from Shaheen. I mean, overall, there's a lot of positives here to build off of. But as I told Ian last week, the story of the 2021 season each and every week, we know the microscope will be on our quarterback, and that's because it is what it is. But the offensive line, for the intelligent fans of the Miami Dolphins, for the diehard fans who listen to podcasts like this and other Miami Dolphins podcasts, who follow the team day in, day out on social media, we know our microscope is going to be on that offensive line and not as much on the quarterback, because that's where this season is going to be won or lost. I guess we should do, Tom, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the game ball we got to give out. So I'll let you go first. Well, who was your good?
The good for me is was the defense as a whole. I think that was without a doubt the top thing that went really well. I would put maybe number two being special teams unit. I thought both of those units were really, really good. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what more they can bring to the table going forward.
Yep, my good was the punt and return group of Waddle and Grant. I thought they were just absolutely fantastic, and I was very impressed what we saw from special teams and those guys in particular. And maybe Grant will have a role here in Miami this year. I don't know. That's going to be one of the more interesting cuts, because I can tell you right now, if I went through this Miami Dolphins roster, out of the 53-man roster, I could probably tell you 50 guys who are making this team. Those final three I have no clue about, and I think he's going to be in that mix for the final three. Just if they want to carry that extra wide receiver / punt returner, or if they want to do this, they want to do that. I don't know. There's probably three spots that are really, truly up for grabs, and I think he's one of them. So that'll be ugly. So that'll be something to watch. Who is your bad? Just say it. I'm going to say it if you don't.
It's the offensive line.
Yeah, well,
Austin Jackson in particular.
Yes, it's the offensive line, but I'm going to hone in once again on Michael Dieter and Austin Jackson. They were brutal today. And, you know, I know fans like to make themselves feel warm and fuzzy. Oh, it's second year. Oh, it's first preseason game. I know, but these guys, you know, they've been here long enough. I mean, come on, you know, we got to get a little better than this. A little better than this. That's the good. That's the bad. Who was the ugly? What was the ugly in today's game?
Tua's throw.
I just had red zone offense overall because of the plays at the goal line and the interception, which I think was in the red zone.
Brian Flores said it perfectly. You know, he was thankful it was a preseason game, but you have to score touchdowns in those two situations. The offense is moving the ball very well after that first drive. You get inside the 1 yard line, you need to punch it in. You're inside the red zone. You can't throw it into the middle of the field late in triple coverage. It is what it is. But yeah, that was probably the worst part of the game. And I'll agree with you that the red zone offense was tough to watch. But overall, I think this was a good first showing for the Miami Dolphins in this preseason. And, you know, we'll see how they deploy them going forward in games 2 and 3.
Who gets your game ball?
You know,
I can go first if you want.
Yeah, go first.
Nick Needham was absolutely fantastic. No Xavier Howard, no Jones. And I thought Nick Needham, he broke up a few passes and just looked fantastic out there today. Nick Needham gets my game ball.
All right. I'm going to go Golden Bone Jr.
And yeah, play.
I think the reason I'm going with Lynn Bowden is, you know, he's a guy that's really fighting to carve a role out on this team. And he showed out today, you know, 4 catches for 47 yards along with 17 on 5 targets. And that's with Reed Sinnott and Jacoby Brissett. So I think Bowden, you know, he still has a legitimate shot to make this team. Obviously they can still stash him on the practice squad if he makes it through waivers, which is going to be tough. You know, they gave up a draft pick for him. I don't think they're going to give up on him, but that wide receiver room is deep.
He was a third round pick by the Raiders too, and he's only 1 year in the league. So he is fresh on the mind of every team because he was in the 2020 draft and picked in round three. So every GM and scout, he is fresh on their minds. I don't think he would be able to survive waivers. If you cut him, I think you are
just he'll end up somewhere else.
Yeah, I think someone would grab him in a heartbeat. The thing is, we know the top like five wide receivers from Miami. Those are kind of set in stone. It now comes down to how many will they carry and who rounds out that group. Matt Collins or Robert Foster, one of those two are going to make the team, not even as a wide receiver for their special teams role, because they play the same type of special teams role. It's going to be tough to not hold on to Matt Collins, I got to admit, after the first 2.5 weeks of camp here. So, I mean, it's just going to be tough not to hold on to him. So I don't know what that means for Foster. And Grant, again, if there's a team who wants to part with literally anything, I think Miami might have to, because they do have other options, a punt returner, and they have a log jam at wide receiver. So you might be able to get anything back. Maybe you throw him in a fifth or a sixth, you get a running back. Maybe you throw him in a fifth or sixth, you get a backup offensive tackle. I don't know. You might be able to get something. I just don't know how many teams want to trade for a punt returner. That's the question there. The other thing, two topics we got to cover real quick that weren't talked about in today's game. Number one, we should answer this now because I really don't want to talk about it all year. And we don't talk about it much on the show because, honestly, I care, but I don't care that much. And do you think Zach Thomas will get in the Hall of Fame next couple of years? We don't talk about this because here's the thing. It will happen. Okay, it's going to happen. It will happen one of these times. And last week, Jimmy Johnson went up on stage and he said, you know, Zach Thomas belongs up here. Everyone knows Zach Thomas should be in the Hall of Fame. Zach Thomas will get in the Hall of Fame. Some guys have to wait longer than others. Harry Carson with the Giants had to wait so long, and he got so mad at the end of his wait. He goes, even if they call and invite me, I'm not showing up. Guess what? Within a couple of years, they called, they invited him, he showed up because nobody's turning it down. So some guys, it's unfair, but some guys have to wait longer than others. And I know there's a big thing this week with Armando Salguero. He is leaving the Miami Herald for a new outlet he will work for, and people say, well, now we got someone else. There's a couple things here.
Yeah.
Armando has no say in this. He goes up there and gives a five-minute talk to sort of present him. What he is presenting is provide. He worked with the Miami Dolphins on the presentation. It's not like Carmano's at home with a pen and paper writing stuff down. He works with the organization to put Zach in the best light. He's just reading the presentation. Number one, number two, those voters know who they're voting for before any presentations are given. Okay, you're not going to sway any of those guys. They are longtime old school football reporters, and whoever presents Zach, those guys know who they're voting for. They're not going to be swayed by a five-minute speech. So don't blame Armando. You might not like Armando for various reasons. Don't blame him for that. He literally has no say in it. And he's also probably going to stay in that role because it stays with the person, not with the like newspaper, unless he doesn't want it anymore, which I doubt you would pass that up. So, yeah, Zach will get in, Tom. Zach's getting in. It's just
Zach's going to get in. And, you know, the last 2 years, he was that close.
Exactly.
The last 2 years. This past year – I mean, you go back to a couple of years ago when he was when the Super Bowl was in Miami. He was on the cusp of getting in. He just missed out. This past year's draft class, it was tough to get him in just based on the guys that were getting in the 2021
draft. And next year's is a weak class. It's very weak.
Next year's draft class is very weak. But that's not a knock on Zach Thomas. But when the voters look at it, he stands out as one of the best guys to get into the Hall of Fame next year. And I believe he will definitely get that call next year for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and a lot of these voters, they just – and I don't like this logic. I think it's dumb. But a lot of voters, that's just how they feel. The question is, you know, I'm not putting him in on the first ballot. I'm not putting him on the second ballot. He's like a fourth ballot guy or a fifth ballot, which I don't get it because you're either a Hall of Famer – or you're not. Now, if you got eight other guys who should be in over him and somebody's got to be the cutoff, you could say, okay, I'm putting in those eight, but I'm saving Zach for next year. That is fine. But he'll get in. Everyone needs to relax. He's going to have a day in Canton. You're going to all drive out there and party and enjoy. It's going to happen. Yep. But, you know, I know fans get really worked up over that. It's going to happen. He's a Hall of Famer. He's got multiple people now campaigning for him in their speeches. That's a big help. You got multiple people now. Two. Not just one, two, campaigning for him in their speeches. So he will get in. The other thing we have to talk about, And I know it's last year, but it's very newsworthy. And this is like a news podcast. We have to talk about this. Tom, the Ryan Fitzpatrick quote this week and the Chan Gailey quote this week sort of pulled back the curtain on the 2020 Dolphins. And once again, it's last year. These guys are gone. So on some level, it's who cares. But on some level, it does tell you the logic and the mindset of the decision last year to put Fitzpatrick on the bench and insert Tua. And let me just read the quotes for those who missed it. Ryan Fitzpatrick in The Athletic: "I have a ton of respect for Coach Brian Flores, and we have a very good relationship. But I thought it was a joke at first. We're putting Tua in? I was floored. That was my team. I fought through the shit with those guys. I get the way the NFL works. I get it. But to have it happen the way it did, sort of like a question mark." Last year, there was a lot of reports, unnamed sources, player in the locker rooms, questioning this move, blah, blah, blah. Was Fitzpatrick one of those guys? I don't know. But if he is expressing that now a year later, you know for damn sure he was expressing that in the locker room to other teammates in real time. Yep. So, when we see quotes and you see reports of unconfirmed sources, unnamed players are saying this, and fans, if it's not a positive thing, it's a negative thing. Oh, no, that's not true. He's making up. No, this probably happened. Okay. And it seemed like there was a divide in that locker room. The other quote that Chan Gailey, who's been I'll give Chan credit. Since he left the Dolphins, whether he was retired, whether he was fired, he stayed quiet. He's an older man, stayed home, probably drinking his scotch, smoking a cigar, sitting in front of the fireplace, watching whatever. This week, even he spoke up about this after the Fitzpatrick quote. Chan Gailey: "I was in total shock. We didn't even have a preseason. It was a totally new offense for Tua. We were just starting to hit our stride. We'd won two games in a row, scored a bunch of points, and we moved the ball well. It came as a shock to me. The fact that the offensive coordinator wasn't consulted on this move, Tom, you don't need to be Scooby-Doo to solve this mystery. The call to insert Tua into the starting lineup came from Chris Greer and owner Stephen Ross. Because if you don't consult the offensive coordinator and your head coach doesn't loop in the offensive coordinator, who's making the call?" Oh, we lost Tom from poor internet service. Nope. Okay. Nope. Now you're back.
Well, Spectrum. So, Chan Gailey just needs to stay quiet.
Chan can talk. Okay, he's allowed to talk.
Put a muzzle on.
It's fine what he said.
Chan talk. But I saw enough from his play calling.
Telling the truth, though, which he got no reason to lie, and nobody came out and said Chan's lying. The tech quote's been out there about however many days now. It does give you insight into what the thought process was last year when your offensive coordinator isn't roped in on a decision like this. When he's floored, when the quarterback's floored, either Brian Flores as the head coach isn't consulting with these people, or this call came from above the head coach. And this, we can love the Dolphins. We're all fans. We can be critical of them at times, though. And I'm not even sure there's something to be critical of. It just is what it is. This call came from the owner and the general manager, not from the offensive coordinator, and probably not from your head coach. It just is what it is.
And it's really not that big of a deal.
Well, not now, because they're all gone. But
what did they expect? Did they think that Tua was just going to ride the pine all year? He was the freaking pick.
No, I know. But the thing is, they weren't even told or made aware this might happen. If you're going to make a change of quarterback, your offensive coordinator should be on that conversation. Okay? The plays. You should tell him in advance.
Listen, Chan Gailey is the biggest he's the biggest rah-rah guy for Ryan Fitzpatrick, and the same thing goes for Ryan Fitzpatrick when it comes to Chan Gailey. That's why Chan Gailey got the job, is because it's Ryan Fitzpatrick. But this also tells me that because they were shocked by it or whatever else, Chan Gailey did not do enough to help Tua last year. Let's be blunt.
Well, then
because he was caught off guard with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Ryan Fitzpatrick being his boy. Listen, we can go in circles about this.
Well, here's
the decision was made because Tua is the guy putting the asses in the seats, not Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Here's the thing, but if you connect the dots, if you hire Chan Gailey, did they not tell him the plan is to start Fitzpatrick at some point? We're going to move to Tua. Be ready for it? Because from what his quote is, he wasn't ready for that. And he didn't have an offense ready for Tua because it sounds like they didn't tell him that they're going to play him this year and it came out of the blue. And at least if they told Chant, look, in the next week or two or three, we're going to insert Tua, be ready. He said he was caught off guard and was never told that. So my thing is, it's not a knock on Chant. I know people like to knock Chant. It has nothing to do with Chant. Take out the name Chan Gailey. Put any offensive coordinator's name. Put an offensive coordinator, Tom Ersey. If they don't consult you on a move and have you ready to go, that's just poor planning, poor leadership, a mistake from the organization top. It has nothing to do with Chan. It could be any offensive coordinator X. I don't care who the name is. It's just, how do they not consult your offensive coordinator when you have a young quarterback ready to go in and everyone's caught off guard with their feet on the floor? Like, what the hell are we doing? Like, how was there no consultation where they weren't told in advance? That just is mind-boggling to me. On the NFL level, that's the part that's just like, what were they thinking?
But here's the other side of that. You're an offensive coordinator. You know you have a young quarterback. Aren't you preparing him for the situation if Fitzpatrick gets hurt? Shouldn't you have something available for your quarterback, your backup quarterback, if he goes down? That's just unpreparedness.
Yeah, but you're not going to – you're going to build an offense around your starter. That's just how this league is. The starter gets all the reps in practice. The starter gets all the reps in practice in season, not counting like in August. In season, the starter gets all the reps. You got to build your offense towards your starter. Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm sure they sort of tried to change on the fly once they found out we're playing Tua. That's why they probably did it after the bye week to give themselves a week. But, you know, the larger point is there was clearly a lack of communication amongst the front office and the staff. And, what Flores knew and what he did not know is also interesting. We obviously saw last year he was kind of quick to take him out of games at time too when he struggled. Was he sort of in the Chan camp where he was caught off guard too with this call? Or did he know and just not communicate it ever to Chan Gailey? I don't know. I just find it interesting because now we got to peek behind the curtain. You know, why Ryan Fitzpatrick still talking about his time in Miami? We can debate. I mean, just anytime you're asked about, say, I'm in Washington.
He's the ex-girlfriend. Just
I know.
He just needs to move on.
Because he knows this is a – move on. Because he knows it's a roster that's ready to win, and now he's not here. That's why he's hurt. But at some point, you know, you're in Washington. You have a new team. It's August. It's the week of August 9th when he said this. You're asked about this. Say, I'm now in Washington. I'm not talking about last year. And Chan Gailey, I'll give him credit. He has stayed quiet. For, you know, 8 months, he hadn't said a word. So but you know what? This week, with that quote, he goes, "Now I'm chiming in." Because everyone's saying blah, blah, blah. He goes, "Chan goes, I didn't know either." So he can defend himself. He's entitled to. It's just a peek behind the curtain to the 2020 season. And, you know, because we saw those unnamed sources, unnamed quotes, players off the record. It all appears to be true from what these two are saying that they just weren't if it was communicated better, I think there would have been no issue. Clearly, this was a lack of communication from the top of the organization down. And that's what the issue is. The people involved doesn't matter. It's just the lack of communication, which you don't usually see at this level with teams that win 10 games in a year. That's the part that's astonishing. They still won 10 games in a year. So I just found that very interesting because it just goes to show – you know, a few misconceptions we can kind of put to bed now because that call clearly came from above. Clearly came from above.
And that's I'm glad that they made the call. They needed to see what Tua had gimping around, running at like 70%, 80% health on that hip. No preseason, no offense designed for him. He went 6-3. But we can't worry about what happened last year with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Chan Gailey. But we need to make sure we're focused on what Tua can do going into year two. Good luck to Ryan Fitzpatrick. I hope Chan Gailey falls off his rocker here soon enough.
Oh, that's mean. That's very mean. I mean, look.
They
won 10 games last year with Chan Gailey's offensive coordinator. You can't rip him too much. They still won 10 games. They almost made the playoffs.
But you can because Chan Gailey didn't call any decent plays until after he had his afternoon freaking oatmeal cookie. And after halftime, the offense finally showed up. The first half, the offense was terrible.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, okay, great. He figured out how to put together some second-half drives, and the team won games. And I'm happy about that. But Chan Gailey, to me, old-school mentality. He was not the right fit for Tua.
No, he wasn't. And that's not why he was here. But
Right. He was here for
it's just that peek behind the curtain. Just let you know who's really calling the shots in Miami. That's the lead with those two quotes. That's the lead. Who's got the power in Miami? And it's sitting up top there with people not on the staff, let's just say. So next week, the Atlanta Falcons joint practices again this week. It should be interesting. Someone sent me a tweet. I don't know if it's true, that Atlanta is using the second preseason game as their dress rehearsal. I saw today while watching the Giants and Jets. The Giants are using the third preseason game as their dress rehearsal. I think every team's going to use either second or third. Every team's going to handle this not the same way. So I don't know what Miami will do. If I had to guess, I think most teams will use the third as their dress rehearsal. I know, once again, if that tweet I got today is true, that Atlanta has announced it'll be the second, then maybe some teams are using the second. We'll see in Miami. I honestly don't know. Flores hasn't said in his media sessions all week, so it'll be interesting to see what Miami does this week, who plays, who doesn't, and we'll see this week how the offensive line looks. I expect to look a little bit better because the Bears' front seven is very, very good. Atlanta's isn't as strong, so if the offensive line struggles against this week, that might be a major red flag. I think they'll look a little bit better against Atlanta because Atlanta doesn't present the same challenges that Chicago does, both in practices and in a preseason game.
Absolutely. So we'll be back. We're going to start getting more shows ramped up through the week. We'll give you some news and information here at DolphinsTalk.com. Please be going to the website, DolphinsTalk.com, for all the latest Miami Dolphins news and information. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you all for listening, if you are listening on the next day. That'll do it for the post-game wrap-up show. Mike, anything to add before we sign off?
No, just be sure to go to BetUS.com. Use a promo code DolphinsTalk. Go to Manscaped.com. Once again, same promo code. Save 20% and get free shipping. Also, go to our YouTube channel. Subscribe. We have a lot more YouTube content. Let me say that again. YouTube content coming in the weeks in the lead up to the season and in this upcoming season. So everyone go to YouTube, search for Dolphins Talk, subscribe to the channel, and smash that like button.
Absolutely. Everyone have a great evening, and we are out. Fins up. Let's go.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.